Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Glenn Falkenstein from Falcon Screen, and welcome to 2018. It has been an amazing summer of films and fun, and we are back, and we have our wonderful, wonderful panel with us. Joining us, esteemed traveler and film blogger, Virat Nehru. Virat, welcome back.
Yes, I am back from a third world country, back to my privileged first world lifestyle.
Where there are films at every corner and every day. And Chris Evans, our intrepid filmmaker, who is back and been making films all summer. You have had a wonderful
time.
Some of the summer.
Yeah, I've had a pretty good time lately. It's good to be back in the air.
It is. Wow, it's been a lot's happened in the past month.
Talking about making films, though, congratulations to our newest filmmaker on the panel, Glenn Falkenstein, who is now a certified filmmaker.
Yeah, that's right. He has a good eye. I was impressed.
Yeah, I was told that he has a good eye. I've yet to critically assess that, but waiting to look at his efforts.
Oh dear, my film's going to be on film reviewed on Film Fight Club now. I don't know if I can take that.
Ooh. We'll see. That could be a segment down the line.
That could be quite fun.
For anyone who wants to be a filmmaker, because I know a lot of people who listen to these shows, you know, might have that, you know, in the back of their mind desire, like, what if one day I just went out there and made a film? We would like to rep once more for Kino Cabaret and Kino Sydney. They're an organization where you can make any film you want, basically, and show it to people in a judgment-free space once a month. Glenn came along to the Kino Cabaret last December, shortly before we ended the show.
It was. And I had so much fun.
Yeah, 48 hours of filmmaking madness.
It was great. I made one of my own, and I helped out with a bunch of others. And if you do want to make films and a little nervous about it, this is a perfect way to get it on the ground.
Yeah, they'll be having their first event of the year. I believe it's either the 24th or the 25th of January. You'll have to look into this, but it's at Sun Studios in Alexandria.
And we'll be talking more about that soon. Now, you may be curious as to why we are on the air at 6 p.m. That is because for the next month, we will be on the air on Wednesday nights from 6 till 7, bringing you all the best awards, show contention, and films, and we obviously also on the 2SDL website, so please do tune in at this time.
Say what? 1 hour of Film Fight Club? Whoa!
Over the summer, yeah.
You have us for one whole hour of movies and fighting.
I can't even deal. So much movie, so much entertainment, so much fighting, so many dudes.
So many.
We'll try to keep having women on the show. We'll do our best to be benevolent in our sexism.
Hashtag time's up.
Wow. Well, we do have many amazing guests. We'll be having many more amazing guests and filmmakers throughout the year, which we're looking forward to. But for the moment, we are talking about the biggest film event of this week, which is the Golden Globe Awards, which just happened. We are talking about the best of 17. It is 2018. We were talking about doing this in 2017, but we really wanted to hold off until 2017 to pass so we can see all the boxing day releases.
Yeah.
But first, we want to talk about the biggest film of 2017, undoubtedly, and that is The Last Jedi. Now, just forewarning, it has been out a month, and we've seen it a couple of times each, so this is a spoiler-filled discussion. We will be talking about some of the intricacies of the film, some of the major and most controversial aspects. So if you have not seen the film, we strongly recommend you do. But just tune in another 15 minutes or so.
15 minutes, yeah. So I guess the time starts now. Come back at 6:20.
Yeah, but like,
maybe every 5 minutes we should add a little warning to the listeners who are tuning in now.
Yeah. Who are we kidding, though?
I mean, spoiled Star Wars.
It's Star Wars, so who are we kidding? I'm pretty sure all of you have seen it. If you haven't seen it, you probably don't care, in which case, join the queue.
We do recommend you see it because it is quite something, if only as a discussion piece. Now, it's actually quite interesting. The last show of last year, we finished on the evening of Wednesday, December 13th.
Yeah, when Star Wars was about to premiere, and me and Glenn saw it that night.
We did. We had a lot of fun. And we're picking right up where we left off, as does The Last Jedi.
Yes.
Now,
Nice segue.
Thank you. Now, we've reviewed quite a few films this year, and quite a few of them are very controversial, or very divisive, I should say. Mother was one, Killing a Sacred Deer was one, though The Last Jedi might just take the cake as the most divisive film of 2017.
Yeah, what is going on? It's a Disney blockbuster four-quadrant crowd-pleaser, and yet people can't stop tearing each other's hair out over it.
And there was a fan petition to get it removed from the canon at one point, and that was taken down.
That's pathetic.
But actually, going back to Mother, I still found it to be the most exciting, divisive film. Because
dude, we'll get to talk about Mother later on.
It caused an actual division between Jennifer Lawrence and Darren Aronofsky.
We can save this for later. We should talk about Star Wars now. Trust me, I'll find a way to bring Mother into this. anyway.
So Mother is the new Terrence Malick of Film Fight Club. You heard it here first.
Anyway.
Now, The Last Jedi. It is remarkable because, I mean, this is, I can't think of a film of this notoriety, of this level of blockbuster, where the division among critics and fans, for instance, Rotten Tomatoes has it on 90% of critics and users at 60. It's quite something.
I think, you know, since we never did a proper review, before we get into just talking about how controversial it is, what did we all think of it?
Yeah, that's
good or bad?
Well, I would say I thought, on balance, it was a good film. Not necessarily a great Star Wars film, but a good film with major reservations. I'm going to run through what I liked and disliked about it briefly. We're each going to do that and then have a bit of a discussion. I'll say what I liked about it first. I loved the Rey-Kylo dynamic. They are the two best parts of the series. They're both fantastic. Kylo is a villain, as if not more interesting in many respects, than Darth Vader. I find him so, so interesting. I also liked the direction Luke took in this episode. I know this was probably the most controversial aspect for many diehard fans, but I did enjoy it, particularly as it expanded our own understanding of the Force. I love the visual effects in this film. The destruction of the Star Destroyer is not just one of the best action set pieces I've seen all year, but one of the best visual pieces I've ever seen committed to film. And I liked Rose a lot. I thought she was a lovely character. I'd like to see more of her, very much so. Please, if you're listening, J.J. Abrams. What I did not like about the film, and there were several aspects. One was the follow-through from the last film. This is the second film in a trilogy. It should be the part of a trilogy. And as soon as Luke tossed the lightsaber off that ridge, I knew that we are looking at an entirely different film in tone and style. And I have a strong feeling that there has been a lack of planning in terms of mapping out the entire trilogy, which is quite strange to me. And I also saw this in respect to some of the major characters. Phasma and Snoke weren't two of the most interesting characters. They didn't necessarily deserve arcs akin to their predecessors in the original trilogy, but just killing them off in the way that happened, or at least the way it appeared to happen, was very perfunctory for me. I did like Snoke a lot. I thought it was really interesting, and I still have no idea who he is or where he came from. I didn't like how Domhnall Gleeson was characterized. He was one of the most terrifying aspects of the first film, was General Hux. And in this, he was basically thrown around rooms a lot and
comic
told
relief.
To... Yeah, he was
I was okay
relief.
With that. This movie had enough... Like, Snoke was a much bigger part of this movie. In the first film, I know, yes, he gets killed off randomly halfway through. If anyone's just tuning in now, we're spoiling the hell out of Star Wars The Last Jedi, so come back in 10 minutes if you want to hear some movie discussion that doesn't involve spoiling the movie.
Or just stay and listen to it and don't watch Star Wars, because who cares?
Yeah, though I liked the movie, I wouldn't begrudge anyone who takes the suggestion that Virat made.
Thank you, Chris.
Anyway,
yes, Chris, what did you... I know we have a few different opinions on this. What did you think of The Last Jedi?
I thought it was a pretty good film. I thought it was the best action blockbuster of the year. I thought it showed a playfulness that's totally missing from the Marvel movies. I always like to take an opportunity on Film Fight Club to slam Marvel, and that trend will continue in 2018.
Yes, because we're consistent more than the Star Wars universe.
Probably. The Marvel movies, people always praise for being fun. But for me, they're lacking the fun of storytelling. You know, this is a movie that goes in wild directions and takes big swerves and twists. Even from the opening sequence, it's got this World War II movie homage bomber scene that has like three or four different twists, you know, just in the way that the action scene unfolds and plays out. Star Wars, for me, if you go back to Empire Strikes Back, which everyone seems to agree is the best, that's a movie just full of thrills and spills, just wild little mini twists from scene to scene to scene. And The Last Jedi brings back that kind of playfulness in tone and energy to just create a fun time, whereas I think Star Wars, prior to this, has gotten too self-serious. And I think it did a better approach to revitalizing Star Wars than The Force Awakens did. Because The Force Awakens, if anything, took Star Wars, like, treated it too much as a joke. This movie injected humor into the proceedings while still totally believing in its own world. You know, the Force Awakens was treating this like a franchise with how closely it stuck to A New Hope and was remaking elements of this. Whereas this was, you know, imagining a new story within this world and branching out from The Force Awakens a lot more in my mind. I agree with what you said about Rey and Kylo. I loved their dynamic. It was the most interesting thing about The Force Awakens and the only time in that movie where you could see Star Wars stretching out to become something more. And I think Rian Johnson continued it in a great way. I loved the kind of mix of sexual tension and comedy and malevolence in their scenes together.
And the shirtless Kylo Ren, which had to come up.
Which was hilarious. I liked how Luke Skywalker Mark Hamill in portraying him didn't play it too seriously, like a Gandalf kind of type character, and instead injected a little bit of like the old Star Wars campiness while still, you know, treating it to a degree seriously. I think we can talk later about people's problems with how they portrayed Luke in this movie. But I'll let Virat speak first. The last thing I'll say before I do that is always withholding the mic. The last thing I'll say is that Finn and Rose's storyline was really just filler designed to just keep this movie shuffling along. And I think even though that's how it introduced a lot of the like heroic action that, you know, because that wasn't really present in the other plot threads that were going on, I think that's its real purpose, to keep it, you know, Rey and Kylo are having a big human psychic drama, and the Rebel Alliance are kind of squabbling about mutiny. Finn and Rose were there to inject like classic Star Wars action, but this movie was branching Star Wars out into something new and different, and that wasn't really necessary. Anyway, Virat?
Yeah, my biggest problems were definitely as to what this movie wanted to be, and I was confused throughout as to whether they wanted to be a human drama between Kylo and, you know, that kind of beautiful, very sort of interpersonal dynamic, which we haven't seen in Star Wars. It's always been about the big set pieces, and I was very sort of pleasantly surprised that this could be almost a two-person character study.
Almost like, I mean, Star Wars at its best has gone to that. Empire Strikes Back was going there with Luke and Yoda, and then Luke and Vader, and Revenge of the Sith was doing that with Anakin and Obi-Wan, right?
So they're following the rule of two from the Sith Order, effectively.
Yeah, basically. Yes. Star Wars is at its best when it's two people, like one representing light, one representing dark, and we get to see those ideas play out. Yeah. Even Rey and Kylo in Force Awakens is when it was at its most interesting, right?
But at the same time, I think that's what really sort of confused me, because in trying to do that, I wasn't sure we'd committed to that aspect to begin with. There were, you know, every character from Rogue One, for example, was just shoehorned into this narrative, and I just didn't see the continuity there. And The Force Awakens was just, I just didn't see the point of that entire first movie. You know, this kind of made that whole first film redundant, if we're going to talk about that. So in terms of franchise continuity, I really had issues with that. And also, Adam Driver's portrayal of Kylo Ren.
Dude, you didn't like it? For me, that was one of my favorite performances in a movie all year.
Yeah,
like he was putting in something way beyond what Star Wars deserves.
that's true, but also it was too much like Patterson. So
that guy shows a lot of range, I think. Kylo Ren was...
But like, there was an amount of deep, brooding introspection that I was just like, oh, come on, man.
Patterson's like showing a goofy side, and Kylo Ren is just like goofy while trying to be...
I know, but it also felt goofy. So it just like, I was waiting for him to just break out into a Basho kind of poem, and like, you know, where I'm writing a haiku now about the mysteries of the universe or something. So
he probably does. I'm just trying to imagine now Kylo Ren sitting in Paterson, New Jersey. I've been through Paterson. It's an amazing image. But I got to say, I really enjoyed his performance in this film.
I loved it.
He was a petulant teenager, but also this terrifying visage who you knew could take this empire and control worlds.
I'll just say, there's been a lot of criticism since The Force Awakens, and very much deserved in the case of The Force Awakens, about how this new Star Wars trilogy is hewing way too closely to the old. But Kylo Ren injected something really new into Star Wars, because like you were saying, you could be afraid of him while still kind of laughing at him, which is what I think real-life evil often is, and it's much more relatable to us. Something like Darth Vader is just like the mega Hitler, colossal evil, as is the Emperor, who no one can imagine themselves being because they just represent evil. But when you look at Kylo Ren, you see the shades of darkness of like how a guy can just, you know, feel humiliated enough that he can just be brimming with anger, and you can laugh at how pathetic his motivations are, but still be afraid of what this guy's capable of.
I agree. In terms of actual sort of screenplay and storytelling, I was more convinced of Kylo's turn to the dark side than I was ever of Anakin's turn, which I thought was petulant. But here, you could really see the betrayal of Luke and how that affected him, and that continuous sort of, you know, nail in the coffin that drove him, you know, slowly. It wasn't just one moment. It was like over time. And that's what really... So that's nothing for the writing. But actually, I'm not sure about Adam Driver's portrayal. But there are other issues. For example, I just didn't... You know, after a point, I was like, am I watching an action movie? which fantastical and that's fun, or am I watching something more grounded? And I was a bit torn apart by that kind of playfulness as to where my loyalty should lie in terms of the actual thematic tone of the film, whether I should just give in to the, am I watching something like The Greatest Showman, you know?
It undermines itself a little bit.
Yeah,
it does. Chris referred earlier to the Canto Bight sequence. It's about half an hour on this planet that probably belonged in the Phantom Menace. They could have
excised probably
this.
Belonged in the on the cutting room floor.
If they could have excised this entire section from the film. I will say though, the end scene on Canto Bight, which did require that,
yeah, that was fantastic.
Sequence was so elegant and so well done. The major action sequences themselves, fleeing from the Dreadnought and from the First Order. Chris, when we first spoke about this, I know you referred to a Dunkirk narrative in a sense. Yep. I feel it was done well in parts. I feel though it was undermined by, I appreciate there's a strong element in this film of characters who you see as heroic and upstanding doing things that are wrong or bad or misguided, yeah, and having serious consequences. Except the characters in this film, and I'm talking about Finn, Poe, and to an extent Rose, did things to such an egregious extent that I can't believe either the screenwriters or the superiors didn't just, you know, slap them wrist, but didn't just lock them up. I would not let these guys anywhere near my brig, near my, you know, ship or near my, yeah, bridge if they had done any of the things they've done in that film.
Yeah, they made a lot of stupid mistakes, but I do appreciate characters just constantly messing up. However, it does, I guess I'm in having this conversation, I'm starting to understand why the fans don't like the movie so much, because it breaks the heroic fantasy of Star Wars to have characters that are so fallible and sometimes so idiotic, yet still wanting us to root for them. I prefer that kind of drama, but I think a lot of the fans don't, and they want Star Wars to stay very simple.
In that sense, Luke was interesting, and I will not delve into that debate right now, but just to, Luke for the entirety of the film, or most of the film, was definitely quite a jerk. And to then build up his legacy as what it did in, yep, the final turn was unbelievable for me. I just didn't buy it.
Can I say, with Luke Skywalker, though, people have this heroic image of Luke Skywalker. It has been built up over decades of fandom. But his character was not at all inconsistent with the Luke we knew back in the original trilogy, who was a bit annoying and who flirted, yep, with the dark side, particularly, yep, in Return of the Jedi. And this is the continuation of that story, the, yep, same story we saw with Rey.
But here he felt more like Harry Potter. Now, like the reluctant, cursed, you know, the one who just didn't want the mantle.
People have turned Luke into the avatar for their wish fulfillment. In, you know, people, I think, believe in Luke Skywalker, the action figure, not Luke Skywalker, the character from the original trilogy. And I thought this, I agree with Glenn, I think this is a conceivable version of Luke Skywalker from the original trilogy, who then goes through a massive depression after he fails after being believed to be the chosen one.
No, and that's fine. But then I just didn't buy the sort of, you know, mantlehood that is bestowed upon him and how he then departs into being the hero, the redemption story, essentially. Because then I bought him as this person who just rejected everything. And I'm like, okay, this is new. I actually like my heroes to actually fall. Mm. But then I didn't want him to rise because I was like, I don't care.
They didn't. The problem is the movie's too overstuffed. I think, yeah, it would be a much stronger film if it let a lot of, you know, fewer plot threads breathe. If we'd had more of a transformational arc for Luke towards him deciding to come back to the light, yeah, at the end, I think it would be a much stronger film.
Yeah, and my major issue with that sequence is that we knew, because of something that happened earlier, the absolute standout worst scene in the film for me, where Carrie Fisher used the Force to fly back to the ship.
I loved that. That was just, as I was watching it, I thought, is this terrible? Then I thought, no, this is great. It looks amazing. It's so surreal. Like, it's not portrayed in a typical way, the way she's kind of like reaching her hand out like a space wizard through all the broken glass and such. Like, it was so visually stunning and so ridiculous that I thought, all right, like, this is what I'm going to a movie to see, the movies to see something as big and dumb as Star Wars for, to like give me something crazy. But I get why people hate it, because it's like, isn't that cheating?
Yeah, I know it looks amazing, it did look amazing on the big screen, but that element of the Force has never been established so well as any of the others. And it also meant that suddenly we knew this film was not going to kill off major characters suddenly in a simplistic way. So when there is the final confrontation at the end, you know it's not going to be simply Luke blown up or Luke dispatched too easily, and that really undermined the suspense of what was the key and what could have been the most, what was one of the best sequences of this film, could have been one of the best sequences in the Star Wars saga.
Him dying, look, I liked the,
or did he?
Yeah. No, getting into the major spoilers now, guys, spoilers, if you're, yes, back on the air, because we're coming up to 6:20 when we said we'd be wrapping this up. So if you're tuning in back now, spoilers continue for The Last Jedi. When Luke died, that just felt completely lazy to me. I was okay with the idea of him force projecting and pulling off a massive trick. I thought that was cool. Jedis are like magicians and illusionists and tricksters at heart, right? But, you know, it just to set us up like, oh, he's going forth to die on the planet. Oh, wait, it was all a prank. Luke's got the upper hand, but then he just dies anyway. It just felt kind of lazy.
I feel it does, though, establish the character he will be and the figure he will be in the next film. And certainly the figure Obi-Wan played in the original
trilogy. And I loved him inspiring the kids at the end. That was a gorgeous send-off scene. But the way that he died just felt kind of like having your cake and eating it, too. Exactly. Like, they wanted us to have the satisfaction of Luke doesn't get killed by Kylo Ren. Ha-ha. But they also wanted Luke to die. You know, when I was first watching this scene, when Luke said, you know, if you strike me down, I'll still always be with you like your father. And then Kylo Ren runs towards him and pushes the lightsaber through him. Mm-hmm. And then he turns around like, haha, I'm still here. I thought that what had happened was that Kylo actually had killed Luke, but he was so strong with the Force that he's like, just like I said, I'm never going to leave you now. And he was like a ghost that was now always going to harass Kylo Ren. I was so excited for episode 9.
It's just this kid standing by his bedside table. Hey, Kylo, how's it going?
I think that's too Rick and Morty for Star Wars.
Maybe it won't, but like, I want to see Star Wars do that kind of nuttiness.
It just might. Well, it brought back one of the nuttiest characters, Yoda, and I've got to say, I was so grateful for this. Because we've seen Yoda in the prequels, and it was CGI Yoda, and it was terrible, and Jim Henson made a beautiful puppet back in 1980, and I was so glad to see him voiced by Frank Oz back on the big screen.
Voiced and acted, because Frank Oz still does that on the set, puppetry.
Yes, he does, and it was such an exquisite scene, and the scene where they burnt the Jedi tree, this is one of the most controversial aspects, but it was wonderful.
That was gorgeous, and it was gorgeous in the way it tied into the idea of failure. Which, you know, I wish was more developed. But the film, I think we're talking about it on a high-level thematic level, right? Right now.
Yes.
To me, in a way, that's a victory in itself in a Star Wars movie released by Disney. Like, we could never talk about Force Awakens in this way.
Yeah, I agree. I think just to talk about
Thor Ragnarok.
Big, sort of supposedly commercial, big blockbuster movie, and we're talking about philosophical themes.
Even if it's a little bit clumsy, it tried to bring themes and ideas to a mass audience movie in a time when those are in a race for the bottom and just getting stupider and stupider. So I think Rian Johnson deserves some credit for what he's tried to do.
Yeah, because the last time I think that happened was Logan with...
And for me, this is a better movie than Logan.
That would be a controversial take.
A different movie to Logan, and I don't feel I can compare it to The Force Awakens yet, because it's a different film to The Force Awakens, and I love that when it came out, because it fulfilled its objective. It told a familiar story, which it needed to do. It allowed this film to flourish, to be something different, which is why The Force Awakens has its place, and I feel this has its place too.
There's one more thing I think is worth bringing up before we move on from Star Wars. Earlier on, we were talking about the issue of franchise continuity. I feel like the biggest... this feels a lot different to The Force Awakens. But as you were saying just then, Glenn, The Force Awakens serves a purpose, right, in terms of franchise building. It was the, you know, we know you guys didn't like the prequel, so we'll show you that Star Wars can be just like it used to be when you loved it by remaking A New Hope and adding in elements of Empire and Return of the Jedi. It was kind of like a remix movie. But the problem is, I think that created a lot of the biggest flaws for this sequel trilogy going forward, which have been carried over and that Rian Johnson's inherited, because it just makes the way this universe works very unclear. Like, has the war been going on for 30 years and they've just changed their names? Because it brings us the exact same scenario that the original trilogy was about, only instead of the Rebel Alliance and the Empire, it's now the Resistance and the First Order. And it makes it feel like, is there just eternal war? If they'd set up a new scenario and then showed how the villains emerged there, then it would be okay. It's a new Star Wars story. But now there's kind of the sense that between the movies, if you're not reading up on all this expanded universe stuff, there's the sense that between the movies, like, nothing's changed and Star Wars stays in stasis so that Disney can keep telling the same story that sells.
Well, I'm hoping that, as we know, there's going to be another film every year for the rest of our lives. Effectively, these films could fill in these gaps, and I'm totally okay with that. I think I would like to know a little bit more about Snoke down the line. We may get that in the future film.
Okay, where does Star Wars go forward from here? Because it seems like people have turned around and are rejecting the way that The Force Awakens was being so close to what the old Star Wars, and people are also rejecting The Last Jedi's attempts to really shake up the franchise and make it something that can go in new directions, like moving away from the centrality of the Skywalker family, you know, making it a less heroic fantasy with fallible characters, etc.
But that says something about fandom and its sort of good things or bad things about it, because that happened with Sherlock as well. You can pay lip service to fandom, and you can fall or die by the sword, or you can actually live by it. So it's terrible anywhere you go.
I think what I'm starting to worry about the franchise going forward, and a place where I think Disney have miscalculated, is that it's seeming like people don't really care about Star Wars, the saga, the continuing story, as much as they really love the moment in time when they first saw the Star Wars movies, and they want to keep that moment alive. And it's kind of like a nostalgia fetishized object now that can never really break forward and become something new.
Well, I actually remember, I'm going back to the very first episode of Film Fight Club here, we were talking about this issue, and I think Chris said, your exact words were, why can't Star Wars be a romance, or this or that in a different genre?
Yep.
And I'd be totally okay with that. I'd be totally okay with telling minor stories on smaller planets. I'd be totally okay with branching out this universe and talking about the people on Canto Bight and on these smaller planets. I liked Rogue One for that reason. I watched it for a second time over the summer. I realized how much I liked it even more because it told a completely different story. I'm okay with hearing different stories in the Star Wars universe. I read the Expanded books when I was a kid, and I'm pretty excited to see some of those stories writ large on the big screen. That was The Last Jedi. It will be in cinemas for a long time to come. We'll be back talking about the Golden Globes. This is me, the song winner from The Greatest Showman. Stay tuned. Your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, no one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us, for we are glorious. When the sharpest words wanna cut me down, I'm gonna send the blood, gonna drown them out. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me. Look out, cause here I come. And I'm marching on to the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen. I make no apologies. This is me. This is me from The Greatest Showman. I saw it. It's a wonderful film. We will be reviewing it. This is Glenn.
This is Chris.
And this is Virat. That's Virat.
That's
and altogether. This is me.
We could do harmonies too. Yeah, hear that, Hugh Jackman? So yeah, that was
great. Hear that harmony, Corrine?
Anyway. Wow, that really.
I thought up that one over spring break.
Breakers, yeah. Heartbreakers.
Speaking of spring break. Breakers, we are talking about the Golden Globes, including Golden Globe Best Actor winner James Franco for The Disaster Artist. Wow. It's 2018 and James Franco brought Tommy Wiseau up on stage. What world do we live in?
It's 2018 and James Franco brought a Time's Up pin on stage and created a social media backlash. So just as promised, one of your beloved celebrities has been tarnished since we returned over the break from his Film Fight Club.
He took away the mic from Tommy Wiseau after bringing him up on stage. What is the point of that?
That was a weird kind of ego moment, wasn't it?
Yeah,
we must give Frank, you know, props to Tommy Wiseau, but haha, remember you're a joke.
Winner. He brought his brother up too, and Dave didn't say anything. So,
but who cares about Dave?
He definitely should have given Tommy Wiseau the mic. Like, this is Tommy Wiseau's moment.
Well, we can only hope that James Franco would win the Oscar, and he can bring Tommy Wiseau because he has promised to bring Tommy Wiseau to the Oscar if The Disaster Artist gets nominated.
Look, let's
isn't that the insulting thing? Like, I felt that was a really insulting moment. Like, oh, I'm going to bring you, but only because I basically feed it off your sort of notoriety.
Let's just be honest.
And then I won.
Tommy Wiseau is a more important and more significant film artist than James Franco. Let's be clear.
Yeah,
about
James
this.
Franco will not have won.
James Franco is one of the prolific artists in Hollywood. He makes like 12 films a year.
Yeah, but they're not good.
A lot of them are.
The Disaster Artist is the first good one in like years. He makes adaptations of Hemingway novels that no one wants to see and that aren't good.
But like,
anyway.
There would be no Disaster Artist. There would be no Golden Globe for Best Actor for James Franco without Tommy Wiseau. There needs to be the worst film of all time for James Franco to win this. I mean, we're forgetting that
there needs to be a worst
fact.
James Franco award for James Franco to take out every year. And no, Tommy Wiseau hands it to him, and Tommy Wiseau takes the mic off him when he presents it and gives a speech.
So no, I think Seth Rogen will win that.
Right.
He's made so many excellent films come on. But I do think we'll be seeing much, much more of him at the PGA and at the DGA and all these
James
other
Franco,
award ceremonies.
Very if he possibly. Doesn't get tanked by the... We'll see.
We'll see.
Time's up.
Speaking of which, the Golden Globes. So the ceremony happened this week. It is a precursor to the Oscars each year.